Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, December 31st, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm still recovering from a cold, and my co-host Ron Menizet is literally out partying. He went to Cousin Jeff's for his birthday, happy birthday, Jeff, and to visit Bruce and Vicky, and I don't want them to get sick. So we're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at FranStorchND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right. So right now, I'm still getting rid of this cold. I feel it's so much better. A lot of the congestion is gone. I still, unfortunately, get some drip when I lay down, and the congestion in the ears keeps coming and going, and I wake up in the middle of the night coughing. But I cough for a while, and then it gets better, and I'm sleeping for a little bit longer than I was. And so once that calms down, sleep really helps this. Rest really helps this, because it kind of takes it out of you. But I must say, I think I am feeling my energy is better now than it was before I was sick. And today I got back on the bicycle, which is great. So I only rode for 30 minutes on the trainer, and I'm probably going to ride for a little bit longer tomorrow, and I'm going to get back into the swing of getting on the bicycle and increasing. So hopefully when I go to Florida, I will be able to actually get on the bike outdoors, at least for a little while. I'm hoping for that. So that's what's going on. Ron is, you know, pretty much out and about. He's still healing. He gets a sore back when he overdoes it. He feels sore, and he still feels kind of weak, and he's working on that. So that's what's going on there. So we'll talk about Hanukkah. So there not a lot of Hanukkah stuff has happened as I'm recording this. So when it does, we'll let you know more about what happened with Hanukkah. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay. But this show is dropping on New Year's Eve, 2025 to 2026. So if you're listening to this for the first, it's dropping at 10 o'clock AM on, New Year's Eve. So I thought I'd talk about New Year's stuff this year. So the wrap up I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to talk about mostly the wrap up of health news in 2025, and then start in a little bit on, I have some nice topics to talk about, like omega-3 fatty acids, irritable bowel syndrome and mast cells, why you should go to bed earlier, and I might talk about the sleep stuff before I talk about the other stuff. So anyway, we're going to see what we get through, and I always have a lot of great information for you. So if you are listening, if you're watching me on Facebook Live right now, please let me know you're here. And if you have a question, throw it out there and I'd be happy to answer it for you. Or at least just say hello and I'll shout you out. I see that there's at least one person listening. So that's great. All right. So let's get started. I want to talk about health news wrap up for 2025. What are some of the things that happened this year? Health content that defined 2025. People, of course, want accessible health information. So one of the things that people talked about were longevity and healthy aging. They were not just curious about extending lifespan. They want to understand the mechanics of aging and what habits could support long-term brain and body health. I was listening to Mind Bialik's Breakdown, the podcast, a little while ago, and they were talking about health span. And I think they were talking with Mark Hyman about that. And Mark Hyman, he promotes a lot of basic healthy things that you can do. He's a big proponent of taking care of your blood sugar, making sure your blood sugar is normal and healthy. And, you know, my favorite thing, which is a diet that I aspire to eat, which is the Pegan diet, which is pretty similar to the Mediterranean diet. You can eat Pegan and also be Mediterranean. I really like that concept of Pegan, and Pegan is paleo vegan. It's a portmanteau of paleo and vegan, because he noticed that his vegan friends were eating pretty similarly to his paleo friends, except that the paleo friends ate animal protein. And so he believes in eating animal protein. And for my body and for a lot of my patients' bodies, I think it's a good idea to eat, at least eat some animal protein. And it's also a very good idea to eat mostly a plant-based diet. So when you are vegan, you eat lots of fruits and vegetables, certain legumes, certain whole grains, and nuts and seeds. And that's basically what you eat. And you stay away from refined sugar, and you stay away from excessive, excessive starches and sugars. And you eat a lot of healthy whole foods. And in the Mediterranean diet, what you do is very similar. They don't restrict bread as much, but they also don't, they don't have you pounding bread. You're still going to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, a lot of monounsaturated fatty acids, and a lot of fish, not huge amounts of red meat, but some, and, some poultry, and, largely plant-based. You're going to get a lot of antioxidants and essential fatty acids from fish and from produce. So these are ways that you can increase your health span. So it's not that just that you're going to live longer, because you can live longer by taking a lot of drugs and meds, pushing back cardiovascular disease by taking a lot of drugs, but that won't necessarily give you a good health span. You're less likely to have a heart attacks and strokes if you do a lot of pharmaceutical meds. But if you eat really healthfully and you eat a lot of foods that have phytonutrients and phytochemicals and antioxidants in them and fiber and things that support a healthy microbiome, when you live longer, you're going to live a healthier life. And that's what you really want. I mean, you don't want to live longer if you're not going to be healthy while you're doing it. So that's things that people were interested in this year. Not just living longer, but living healthfully. There was research on super ager brains, the brains of super agers, and breakthroughs on Alzheimer's disease, and also biological turning points. Then, of course, we heard no end of the GLP-1s and gut health. GLP-1s are GLP is one of the hormones that from your pancreas that helps to regulate blood sugar. And the GLP-1s, what they do is they make it so that they take away your food noise, they improve your insulin sensitivity, and they make it so that you don't have as much cravings for food, and they slow your slow the movement through your gut so that you feel more satisfied longer. But the other side of that is they can slow your gut down so that you wind up being constipated. And they unfortunately do have, gastrointestinal side effects. People get nausea, vomiting, diarrhea with GLP-1 drugs. So people are very, very interested in the GLP-1. So many of my patients are taking GLP-1s, whether they're taking them outright for diabetes or they've been given lower doses for weight loss. I have a lot of patients who are doing that because people get so impatient in terms of weight loss because they try. Really, I think what happens is people try to eat a healthful diet and they just can't stick with it. And when they take the GLP-1s, they're more able to stick with it. And because it takes away the food noise. I had a patient just say that to me last week, that she took she's on this drug and it makes her not think about food so much. Personally, not for me. I have some weight that I could lose and I have no interest in taking GLP-1s just because I really hate the feeling of having my digestion interrupted with. I want to know that I'm hungry. I want my gut to function normally. And I do not tolerate nausea, vomiting, diarrhea well. So I'm not going to go with a little bit of digestive upset in order to lose weight. I'm not going there. I would much rather work on my diet without putting an agent in that's going to mess with my digestion. If I take a supplement that simply makes me constipated or does something strange to my digestive system, I will not take it. I just can't do it. I mean, my PCP wants me to take B vitamins, and the only one I seem to be able to tolerate in a pill form is vitamin B12. The others, like try to take B6 and folic acid, and they give me an upset stomach, so I won't take them. And we're talking, a little bit of transient nausea, but that's too much for me. I can't have transient nausea when I'm sitting with a patient trying to work. Autonomic symptoms are not something I want to know about if I'm in the middle of something that I can't get out of. Like if I'm open with a patient and I'm in patient care, I can't suddenly feel sick, because that involves stopping the visit, running out of the room, that kind of thing, and just, you know, and feeling nausea at any point. That's not something I'm interested in. So the GLP-1s just don't work for me. But, you know, a lot of people are doing the GLP-1s, and they're happy about it, and they're successful about it. One of the funny things is to listen to Howard Stern talking about GLP-1s, how angry he is about them, because he was so proud of himself by being able to control his eating and his diet so that he stayed at a good weight. And now people can just take a pill for it, and anybody can be thin. And, you know, these drugs, there's a large out-of-pocket cost, although the drug companies are working on that, and there's, you know, they have better insurance coverage, and then there's companies you can get them from with a better price, and so more and more people are able to afford them. But if you're wealthy and you're in the, you're in the media, you can, and you have a lot of money, that's not a barrier. So people in that industry, if they feel like they're too heavy and they want to lose weight, they take GLP-1s. Look at Serena Williams. She lost a whole bunch of weight. And her ad is, it's not cheating. It's medicine. It's a medicine that my body needed after kids. You know what? When my patients come in and they're on GLP-1s, I support them. If that's what they want to do, I support them. I do explain to them that there are long-term possible side effects, because GLP-1s make you lose tissue. They don't just make you lose fat. They make you lose bone. They make you lose muscle. So in order to prevent that, you have to eat a lot of protein, and it's harder to eat a lot of protein. So I remember hearing, again, I was listening to Howard Stern and Robin talking about this, and they were talking about how you really have to, was it Howard Stern or was it, it might have been Mayim and Jonathan talking about this, because Mark Hyman was going on about, in order to maintain your muscle mass while you're on a GLP-1, you have to eat a lot of protein. And the argument by either Howard or Mayim or Robin, somebody said it, was that you don't feel like eating the protein. Eating anything heavy, you're not doing it. You're going to take a few bites and you're going to put the fork down. That's the thing, because it takes away your appetite. And so the thing that, because when you lose fat, you don't really want to lose lean tissue. You don't want to lose your skin. You don't want to lose a lot of the fat under your face. And you don't want to lose muscle mass. And you certainly don't want to lose bone mass. And there have been, I've seen Instagrams and TikToks of young women who are in their 20s who are complaining that they've been diagnosed with osteoporosis. That is something that can happen on these GLP-1s. So you have to be aware of that if you're going to take a GLP-1, it's not a get out of jail free card. Doesn't mean that now you can eat what you want, but you're not going to eat a lot because you're on the GLP-1. So you don't have to worry as much about getting exercise. You kind of do, or you're going to get a pathological fracture and you're going to get weaker because you're going to lose muscle mass. So what Mark Hyman says is you have to eat a lot of protein. You have to get your 100 plus grams of protein a day, which is very hard to do when you don't have the appetite for it. And you have to do resistance training. Get your resistance training 4 or 5 times a week. And most people don't do that. I mean, most of my patients, I would say that 80% of my patients don't get enough exercise to make a difference in their health. That it's much more unusual for patients to do that. It's like anything that you need to have as a healthy habit, most patients don't do it. I've talked to dental hygienists. Tell me the truth. How many of your patients floss regularly? And the answer is most of them don't. So where I'm with the floss every single day, and I'm still getting caries, I'm still getting cavities, very frustrating, but I floss, pick, and water floss every single day. I'm still getting cavities. And there are people who are not real good about that. They have less cavities than I do, but they can tell that they have gum deterioration because they're not flossing every day. So the same with these GLP-1s. People don't exercise regularly. It's something that people just don't do. They don't make time for it. They don't prioritize it. And you can kind of understand if people are working hard and they're busy and they have health conditions that make them tired, they're going to be less likely to exercise. So Yeah, this cold is very interesting. It takes weeks to completely get over it. I mean, I don't feel like I'm sick anymore, but my respiratory system is still compromised in terms of making mucus and being sent hypersensitive. So now I'm talking a lot. I can hear that I'm getting hoarse, and I feel like I want to cough, and I subverted it by taking a sip of water. So you'll see me sipping water a lot, and we've talked about how this cold makes you have to hydrate constantly. Anyway, so it's very interesting. The other thing, so any kind of tissue, the GLP-1s make you lose not just fat, but also give you digestive upset, make you lose muscle mass, make you lose bone mass, and also you lose your hair because your body does not prioritize hair. So hair loss tells you that there are other things going on in your body that are a problem. So if you can reduce your stress and eat adequate protein and eat adequate nutrients otherwise, and not eat too much junk, starches, sweets and starches and stuff like that, you're going to have better hair than if you don't do that. So, I mean, I don't think I have as much hair as I had 10 years ago. I'm 62 years old and I'm pretty happy with how my hair looks. I do feel like all the things I do to promote decent hair. What I do is I do take vitamin B12. I take a lot of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, but I eat a lot of produce. I eat a lot of plant-based food, and I eat adequate protein. I try to get protein in at least 3 times a day. My morning protein is usually a protein shake because I don't tolerate dairy well. Otherwise, I would eat yogurt in the morning. And I do eat yogurt, but it's non-dairy yogurt. And non-dairy yogurt, if it's coconut-based, it doesn't really have a lot of protein in it. And so I have a protein shake, and my protein of choice is bone broth protein. And then midday, I have either healthy cold cuts, which is mostly turkey breast, or I have tinned fish. I'll have either tuna or salmon. I got a tin of calamari and olive oil, so that I'm going to have some of that this week. Sometimes I have herring. So I have usually some kind of tinned smash fish in the middle of the day. And then dinner is usually either fish or some kind of poultry. Once in a while, it's turkey burgers. We tend to eat burgers more when we've got a lot of physical activity, and both Ron and I have not been getting extreme amounts of physical activity. I hope that changes over the course of the year. So anyway, so the GLP-1s were a huge thing that were in the news. You heard no end of it. And one of the things you heard was that, there's the two basic drugs, semaglutide and tirzepatide. Semaglutide goes by the brand names of Ozempic and Wegovy. And tirzepatide goes by the names Mounjaro and Zepbound. And semaglutide works with just GLP-1, and tirzepatide also does GIP, GLP-1 and GIP. So you tend to lose more weight with Mounjaro slash Zepbound, tirzepatide. So that's what we find. So there's also more interest in vitamins, minerals, and supplements, of course. And you hear me talking about that all the time. I certainly take them, and that two of the supplements that are talked about are how unusual. You've heard me talk about these supplements no end. One of them is fish oil and the other one is turmeric. Everybody's really interested in those supplements, and that's understandable because fish oil is like supplement 101. It's fish oil and turmeric, really. They're two of the first supplements I offer people. I will tend to offer fish oil before I'll order turmeric because if you really want to get turmeric that gets into your bloodstream, it has to be enhanced. And turmeric that's enhanced has to be, it tends to be more expensive than plain turmeric. You can get cheaper turmeric that if it has black pepper in it, but you're going to water dispersed turmeric is going to absorb better, more expensive. The turmeric phytosome, curcumin phytosome, is going to absorb better. And then there's amorphous curcumin that also absorbs very, very well. You're going to be more likely to get it into your blood as opposed to going through it right through your system and hanging out in your digestive system. If you have inflammation in your digestive system, like if you have irritable bowel syndrome, which is really a functional disorder, it's not so much about inflammation, although there is some inflammation involved. if you have that, or if you have inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, then you could take a turmeric that's less absorbable because you want it to arrive down in your gut and reduce inflammation there. And in that case, that's when you can get just turmeric powder and eat it in your food, eat curries, and also drink turmeric tea. If you put black pepper in the turmeric tea, if the turmeric tea has black pepper in it, you're going to absorb it in systemically a little bit better. But fish oil and curcumin are both really great for reducing inflammation in the body. Fish oil is part, it has omega-3 fatty acids, which are part of the structure of every cell in your body. All of your cell membranes have omega-3 fatty acids, and it helps to improve cell membrane fluidity when you get adequate omega-3 fatty acids on board. So it makes it so that things can get in and out of your cells better. And fish oil also is part of the PGE1 and PGE3 series, the omega-3s, and those are anti-inflammatory systems in your body. And fish oil helps as a precursor to hormones. So if you have adequate omega-3 fatty acids, you're going to have better hormone function. So it's part of every cell membrane in your body, but there's a lot of DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, on your nerves and especially in your brain. So if you have adequate DHA, you're going to have less brain fog. And I take a lot of fish oil. So I take liquid fish oil and I take like a tablespoon and a half a day, or about two teaspoons, not a tablespoon and a half, a teaspoon and a half or 2 teaspoons a day. Anyway, what I do is I take a regular tablespoon and I fill it most of the way, but not all the way. And I take that every day. And I must say that with all the stuff I got going on, brain fog is really, even when I don't feel well, I have minimum of brain fog. I'm very pleased about that because I'm able to take liquid fish oil. And I take liquid fish oil that's flavored with lemon, and I tolerate it and I don't mind the taste. So Craig is listening right now, and he is a pescatarian, and he's talking about a brand of krill oil has turmeric in it. So krill oil is something you can get omega-3 fatty acids too, but my experience is the yield of those omega-3 fatty acids in krill oil is much lower than when you take fish oil. The whole idea behind taking krill oil is that you can take less of it because there's astaxanthin in it. So when you look at a krill oil pill, it's very dark red. It's a similar color to when you take astaxanthin pills. I take astaxanthin pills separately, but it's a very dark red pigment that comes from algae, and animals that eat algae will bear that dark pink red color, like flamingos and salmon and shrimp. That's why they're pink, because they consume algae that has astaxanthin in it. So astaxanthin is a terrific antioxidant, so it stabilizes the fish oil. So the idea is that you don't have to take as much omega-3 fatty acids because you're taking it bound to astaxanthin. So I have seen people take krill oil and not get as good results with it because you're still taking less omega-3 fatty acids. If you are taking krill oil and you're getting good results and you're happy with what you're seeing, please take the krill oil. It's okay. I don't tend to recommend it. I prefer to recommend I prefer to recommend straight up fish oil. I also have started recommending astaxanthin more. I have so many patients who are coming in and they have LDL cholesterol that's barely over 100, and their doctors are freaking out and prescribing statins to them. I have a patient right now who's taking statins. I'm concerned that his blood sugar has gone up specifically because he's taking the statin. We do know that statins can raise your blood sugar because they block the production of cholesterol. And what do you need as part of all the cell membranes in your body? Cholesterol. Every cell in your body has cholesterol as part of the cell membrane. So if you start blocking the production of cholesterol, you're not going to have as healthy cell membranes. So if your cell membranes are not functioning the way that they're supposed to, one of the things that can happen is you get insulin resistance. So you get insulin resistance, your blood sugar can go up. So I'm wondering if this guy will talk his doc into letting him come off the statin and seeing if his blood sugar normalizes. So and that was very interesting for me to see. I have high LDL, But I do have large buoyant LDL also, and I am able to get my triglycerides pretty low, and high, and I have high HDL. So unless I have terrible cardiovascular disease, which as far as I know, I don't. And fortunately, cardiovascular disease does not run in my immediate family. My sister's okay. My mother's okay. My father was never diagnosed and he lived to 79. Mother's 86. She doesn't have it. So anyway, unless somebody tells me that I absolutely have to, I'm not going to do it. What I am doing is I'm taking a decent dose of astaxanthin. And astaxanthin doesn't have the site. It doesn't block the production of cholesterol. It helps to block LDL or enhance LDL bonding. Anyway, it makes it so that it pulls some LDL out of circulation. So it probably enhances LDL bonding to cells. Plus it's an antioxidant, it's a powerful antioxidant. So if you have oxidized LDL, it's going to make it so that your cholesterol is less likely to be oxidized. So when it combines with cells in your body, it's in good shape. So I've started offering astaxanthin to my patients whose doctors are freaking out about their cholesterol levels, plus talking to them about, look, reduce your starch and sugar, get regular exercise, especially some cardio, take fish oil. I think people just eat too much starch and sugar and they don't regularly eat produce. This is something that it's a theme that I see. So people are very interested in getting trustworthy information and advice about what supplements that they should take. And so lots of articles clarify risks and benefits of taking certain supplements. Here's some more stories. There was a study that found turning point when the body starts aging rapidly, and that there could be a measurable acceleration point in aging. Let's see if there's something interesting. So there was a study that said that human aging doesn't necessarily happen at the same pace through our life, and that there's a lot to discover about the aging process, especially when it comes to how it impacts body's organs. And there was a study that found by focusing on aging-related protein changes in the body, there's an acceleration in the aging of organs and tissues around the age of 50. And of the protein, scientists found that expressions of 48 of them lead to diseases that are linked to diseases that are increased with age, like cardiovascular and liver disease. But we can't stop aging from happening. And there's certain ages where you undergo a burst of aging. Some show at 44 and some show 60, which I can attest to because I seem to be in the doctor's office every couple of weeks for something else. And for a different organ system. Right now I'm dealing with, I just had a respiratory condition, which made my D-dimer go up. So now my PCP is worried about my rising D-dimer. And the D-dimer can indicate that you're having a blood clot. I have no evidence of having any kind of a blood clot, a discrete blood clot in my body. So he's wanting me to take an enhanced form of N-acetylcysteine to get get this D-dimer to go down and to increase my natokinase to help the, because I became hypercoagulable, and we think that that may be a result of the presence of excessive spike protein antibodies and maybe spike protein in my body, because I have post-vaccine syndrome. So anyway, I'm dealing with that, and I'm dealing with orthopedic stuff, and I still deal from the post-vaccine syndrome, some dysautonomia, not sure if I still have some Lyme on board, I am in the acupuncturist and the chiropractor every couple of weeks, which I don't mind at all. Plus, I'm having tooth stuff. I just had a root canal last week. I'm going to have another one next month. And, of course, after you have a root canal, you have to get a crown. So I have to get that taken care of. And I would just like a Wednesday where I don't have to go. I don't have an appointment. That would be very nice. I think that on Christmas Eve, I didn't have an appointment. But I had one today, and I had one 2 weeks ago, and I think in January I'm pretty light, although I have to go back to Dr. LaGuardia, and I have to go back to the dentist and the endodontist, and then after the endodontist, I have to go to the dentist. So it's tiresome, and I've talked to people as we get older. We seem to be seeing so many different doctors and so many different specialists. Like I said, I don't mind going to the chiropractor, and I don't mind going to the the acupuncturist, because those to me are maintenance, and I always feel good when I enjoy seeing those. I love those people, and I feel good when I get good results for when I see them, and I have a relationship with my chiropractor and my acupuncturist. They're people to me, so that's really nice. So anyway, wow, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. Craig is talking about Dr. Zubovich. I used to send people to him because it was really hard to find a doctor that would aggressively treat Lyme disease, and you would have to go to Bridgeport to see him, and I would send people from here down to Bridgeport to see Dr. Zubovich. I don't have to do that anymore because thank you, Dr. Bazeal. Dr. Bazeal's only in Ashford. He's not too far away. So if I want somebody to get aggressively treated for tick-borne illness with antibiotics and also supplements, they get to go to Dr. Bazeal. Otherwise, I will treat them, or they get to go to Dow Vitality in Hebron. So between the three of us, you're going to get you can get healthful treatment of tick-borne illness. With the extended human lifespan, organ systems probably don't adhere to a unified aging rhythm. So that's interesting. That was one of the things that people were interested in this year. The rate of aging. So then there was that whole thing about the protein powders, that a lot of shakes tested positive for high levels of lead. And, so people were concerned. The protein powder that showed up with the least amount of lead was whey protein, because it's not. So if you take protein that's from bones and bone broth is going to have the bones can store lead. So there was a concern that there would be excess lead in that. But the kind of protein powders that seemed to have the highest levels of lead were plant-based ones, unfortunately. They were the rice proteins and the vegan proteins. They had the highest levels, followed by the ones made from bone or beef, and with the lowest from whey. And there are people who are dairy intolerant or whey intolerant, like me. I can't take whey to save myself. That is not good in my stomach. But I do bone broth protein, and I figure that I'm eating enough fiber. I have a great microbiome. My digestive system works really well. I'm getting adequate selenium, which is going to make it so I'm not going to hang on to excessive lead. And I take NAC as well. And between the NAC and the selenium and the vitamin C, I'm going to make enough glutathione that I'm not going to hang on to any excess lead in my body. If you're going to the bathroom regularly, you have good, if you're eating a plant-based diet and you have regular throughput, as it were, that you're having a decent BM at least once a day or more, you're probably not going to hang on to heavy metals. And in order to have a decent BM, to 1 to 3 times a day, you have to eat fiber. You have to eat fiber. You have to eat produce. And you can't just eat, bagels. You can't just eat white flour and sugar and then have, meat and potatoes for dinner. You have to have regular quantities, a lot of quantity of produce in order for that to happen. So that's why I like to have either my breakfast is either non-dairy yogurt, and chia seeds go into the non-dairy yogurt. And with that, I have 4 kinds of berries: the strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, sometimes banana, usually not. And before that, I will have a small amount of protein, like a piece of a protein bar and some fruit before that, plus a quarter cup of smoothie. So I'm getting a lot of fiber and not a lot of fluid first thing in the morning. And midday, if I have my protein, it's going to have some fiber with it. I like to have, I've been enjoying having curried chickpeas with lunch along with my tin fish, and lettuce and tomato goes with that. And sometimes I have seaweed salad. So I'm eating some kind of produce midday as well. And then dinner definitely has produce. It's going to be either a soup or a salad or a stir fry that has vegetables in it with protein. So if you have good throughput, you're not going to hang on to heavy metals in your body. People were interested in what to expect from taking the GLP-1s. I think I've exhausted the GLP-1. And then there was the whole thing about measles. There's been increased increased incidence of people coming down with measles, because there are a lot of folks that there are a lot of folks that have that are non-vaccinated now. A lot of parents are choosing not to vaccinate their children because they think that vaccinations are not healthful. So when you have a lot of non-vaccinated kids, if somebody somewhere has measles, measles is exceedingly contagious. You think that COVID was contagious. COVID is pretty contagious. If somebody's in a room breathing out aerosols of COVID, you're probably going to catch it, but not necessarily. If you are in a room and one person has measles and you're not adequately vaccinated, you're getting measles. It is super contagious. So kids who are unvaccinated, they get anywhere near somebody who has it, they're going to get sick with measles. So we're seeing more cases of measles. And in fact, in the last month, we had our first case in 4 years of measles in a non-vaccinated child. So it's one of these things that's controversial. There are people who really believe that if you get measles and you're well nourished, you're not going to get sick from that. And that's probably true. But on the other hand, you could. And my concern is that I see the way that most of my patients are and how they eat. And if they have some kind of health issue going on, they're not doing a real good job of maintaining a really nourishing, healthy diet. So they're more likely to catch these things and not do well with them. So it's very concerning. So I'm sort of on the fence about vaccines, and I don't know how popular it's going to make me on either side. But on the one hand, I am of the belief system that, you know, vaccination should be a choice. But on the other hand, there's certain things. I don't necessarily advise my patients not to get vaccinated. Like if a patient has not had bad experiences with vaccinations and they're thinking they should get one, they might want to get it. I had somebody come in recently who was like, should I get the shingles shot? And if you look at the shingles shot is 97% effective at preventing shingles. And shingles is wicked painful. I'm terrified to take a vaccine ever again because I had such a bad experience with the COVID vaccine. And if you did not have a bad experience with the COVID vaccine and you want to continue to take them, then you can do that. But I don't dare go near the COVID vaccine because one of the things it did to me is it made me more hypercoagulable. And, you know, poor Dr. LaGuardia and I are monitoring this D-dimer that goes up and down when I get an infection or inflammation, and we're afraid I'm going to get some kind of a blood clot. But I'm taking so much stuff to help to prevent that. So it probably won't happen. And, you know, my D-dimer got really high during this cold that I had, but I have no symptoms from that as far as I know. Maybe a little lightheaded, but the cold gives you lightheadedness because it gives you a lot of congestion. But I have no symptoms of blood clotting. And Dr. LaGuardia said, yes, it's fine for you to continue to do cardio exercise, so I'm doing it. I'm not going to go crazy with it for another couple of weeks, but I'll do a little bit, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes until I go to Florida, in which case in Florida, I'll probably get on the bike for maybe an hour at a time and not every day, and get in the pool as well. So anyway, people were thinking that vitamin A would help to treat measles. It is true that you'll probably do better with measles if you're vitamin A sufficient, but if you catch measles, it's not going to get rid of the measles. And you might do better with the measles than if you don't have it on board, but it probably isn't going to prevent you catching it. And if you catch it, it's hard to say what's going to happen when you catch it. People used to die of measles, and people also don't die of measles. So it's hard to say what can happen. And I don't know, if I found out that I had inadequate MMR antibodies, I might choose to get the MMR vaccine. The thing with the COVID vaccine, this is mRNA, where it teaches your body how to make its own spike proteins. And that's not what the MMR or the DTaP vaccines are. They are, you know, they're inactivated protein portions, antibodies that you can take, and then your body will make antibodies to those protein portions. And your body's not going to sit there and make spike proteins for it, because that's the scary thing about the COVID vaccine, is that it teaches your body how to make spike proteins. And what they didn't count on was that some people are just going to keep making them, depending on their genetics. And some people, the antibodies persist at high levels for a long time and cause chronic inflammation. So that's something that they're studying at Yale. They're studying post-vaccine syndrome at Yale. And I would like to read more and possibly even get involved in that study. So the mRNA vaccines are much different than, you know, just your MMR, your measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and your DTaP, which is your diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. What's unfortunate is that those vaccines come in those three. You can't get them separately. You can't get separate measles, separate mumps, separate rubella. You can't get separate diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. You have to take a DTaP, and you have to take an MMR. And my doc wanted me to get a tetanus shot before surgery, and I talked him into waiting for that. And I'm just really afraid to take any vaccination because of the inflammation. And I'm also afraid to take the shingles shot. But I do take I take regular vitamin A, and I do take antiviral herbs, especially this time of year. I'm taking antiviral herbs every day. So today I have a combination that has elder and maitake, and I think reishi, and maybe something else in it, astragalus, that's right. So I'm taking that regularly, and I'm hoping that'll help me for the winter. Plus I'm taking my lung herbs that I take every day, and I take, you know, 15 to 20,000 IU of vitamin A every day. So and vitamin A is a great antiviral. We do have people increase their vitamin A and vitamins A, D, C, and zinc when they're acutely sick. We have people increase those, and I take all of those every day. So looking forward into the future in terms of health, if you want more information, there's a lot online, and you can turn to me. I will help you get that information, and I'm always trying to keep my ear to the rails so that I can find out the latest health information to get you excited about taking care of your health. So that's the wrap-up for 2025. All right, so what should we do first? We want to talk about omega-3s, going to bed earlier, and sleeping in darkness. Those are the things I'm going to start with now. So let's start about people not getting enough omega-3 fatty acids. So what are the health impacts of not getting enough omega-3 fatty acids? Get the omega, like I said, fish oil is supplements 101. It's one of the first things I offer people. And if people can't take fish oil, no matter what they do, I mean, there's people like they're afraid to taste fish oil. So like if they take the supplement, I have different problems with people taking liquid fish oil. Some people don't mind. I prefer people to take the liquid because usually, first of all, the fish oil is more likely to be in the triglyceride form. You don't have to break down a capsule to get it into your body, and it's easy to take more of it. So, and it's a one and done. You know, some people want to take it a couple times a day, which is fine. I don't do that. I take my 1.5 to 2 teaspoons of fish oil in the evening. And, you know, I take lemon flavored fish oil. It tastes oily and lemony, and it doesn't bother me. I don't burp it up. I do fine with it. Some people, no matter what they do, they burp fish oil. If you don't mind taking the liquid form, it's a good thing to do. I had a person come in with SIRS, chronic inflammatory reactive syndrome, who couldn't deal with the flavoring in the fish oil. So if he were to take liquid fish oil, he would have to take plain fish oil with no flavoring in it. I had unflavored cod liver oil once, and it was absolutely unpalatable. So I couldn't do that. I also had cod liver oil that was mint flavored, and that was not good. I mean, fish oil, when you want to take fish oil, if it's flavored, it should be rosemary and or lemon and or orange. And that makes it palatable. Lemon is probably the best one. Although you can get these emulsions, so Ron takes the emulsion. The thing with the emulsion, they put some stuff in it to emulsify it, some maybe a starch. The only problem is because you're putting the starch into it, the yield of actual fish oil, omega-3 fatty acids, in a tablespoon is going to be lower than if you didn't have the emulsion. But it tastes really good. They make it taste really good. So there's a company that specializes in emulsions, and Ron gets the lemon emulsion. He loves it, and that's what he takes. He found that if he took fish oil pills, he would burp on them. That weren't when it wasn't emulsified, but the fish oil and the emulsion, that the flavored emulsion, he did great with. So, and those emulsions, they come in lemon, they come in orange, they come in pina colada, they come in fruit punch. So we get him the lemon. What I'm noticing is that this end of the cold, where I'm getting rid of the rest of the congestion, when I talk a lot, it moves a lot of the congestion, probably because I'm talking and I'm moving my sinuses. I'm exercising my sinuses, so things are moving through. And so just when I'm trying to talk and not stop talking, I'm getting drip into my throat, which makes it hard to talk. This is why I have the water on hand, and that's helping that. But that it's interesting that all this talking is making things move. I would do well to have a nice cup of hot turmeric ginger tea when I'm done here. So anyway, interestingly, so when you take fish oil, if you can take the liquid, it's great. If you don't want to take the liquid, most of my patients want to take capsules. The capsules are also flavored. So if you do have a little burp, you're going to taste lemon and rosemary, and that's it. And then little kids, we have little strawberry flavored ones, which they can chew on, and they usually tolerate those pretty well. And then for some people, if they say, I always burp up my fish oil, so we give them enterically coated fish oil. So the capsule has a coating on it that makes it so that it's acid resistant, so it doesn't start to break until it gets into your small intestine. So that way you're less likely to burp it up. And so those are ways to make it easier for people to take. Remember that you can get adequate omega-3 fatty acids by eating smash fish 2 to 3 times a week or more. And remember your smash fish, smash is an acronym for salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. And what those fish have in common is that they are low in mercury and high in omega-3 fatty acids, whereas something like tuna or tilefish or swordfish, they are very high in omega-3 fatty acids, but they're also higher in mercury because they are large fish and they have time to bioaccumulate the mercury. Salmon doesn't, it's a pretty big fish depending on where you get it, but it spends a lot of time in fresh water and you tend to bioaccumulate the heavy metals in the ocean, not so much in fresh water. So because it spends so much time in fresh water, it tends to not bioaccumulate mercury. And then all the other fish, the mash of the smash fish, they're little tiny things. So they just don't have time in the world to grow and bioaccumulate mercury. So and so those are ideal fish to eat. But most people in the world are not consuming a sufficient amount of omega-3 fatty acids. Their researchers say that 76% of the global population is not consuming the daily recommended level of omega-3 fatty acids, specifically EPA and DHA, eicosapentaenoic acid and DHA. Boy, that could explain a lot. I mean, people would be a lot healthier overall if they had adequate essential fatty acids. They're so important to your diet. I mean, I still eat fish a few times a week, and I take fish oil every single day. We hope that will help to inform, and this is something that's too important to ignore. They recommend that health policies get created to make sure people are educated about consuming omega-3 fatty acids. They want nutritional scientists to be paying attention to that, and including clinicians like nutritionists, the food and supplement industry, and policymakers and consumer communities. So it's really important, and people are looking at this all over the world. The health benefits of omega-3 fatty acids are important in all stages of life, especially for people who are pregnant, infants, and young children. The research reached the conclusions after reviewing recommended daily levels of omega-3 fatty acids in over 100 countries, and noted that the recommendations vary significantly from country to country, which creates confusion among the public and highlights the importance of consistent evidence-based guidance, and that the most frequently recommended intake for adults is 250 milligrams a day of combined. So that's not very high. When you supplement, you don't supplement at that level. You supplement higher. I mean, I'm taking more than that every day. That the most frequently recommended intake for adults is 250 milligrams a day combined of EPA and DHA, with an additional 100 to 200 of DHA for people who are pregnant. And those levels can be achieved by eating more oily fish, such as your smash fish, which we just recited several times. So these were shared in Nutrition Research Reviews, which is published by Cambridge University Press, and that the authors acknowledge they do have ties to companies that are involved in the supplement industry. And experts not involved in the research said it sheds light on a very important issue. And there's inconsistencies in how much fatty acid intake is necessary. And this was stated by a cardiologist. The overall message is that people should incorporate fatty acids into their diet. And there's a good overview of some of the challenges of getting enough omega-3s through diet alone, and a look at how various age groups are doing with getting enough omega-3s. Really, really, I can't emphasize this enough. What do omega-3 fatty acids do for you? They reduce inflammation in your body. They are part of the cell membranes of every single cell in your body. And as we just said, they increase your membrane fluidity. So all of the cells in your body are going to be able to communicate with your circulation. So you're going to get more nutrients in and out of the cells. And anything that needs to bond to the cells is going to do a better job of doing it if you have adequate essential fatty acids on board. Also, you take enough essential fatty acids, you get nice skin. You see how I'm 62 years old. My skin, well, I mean, it's Facebook, so, I mean, the camera is hiding. I'm not wrinkle-free, but if you look at me, you know, I probably have long telomeres, but my skin's pretty good. You know, it's not super wrinkly. See me again in 10 years, we'll see what's going on at that point. But, you know, I take a lot of fish oil every day. I didn't used to be as consistent with it. But since my post-vax syndrome came about, I've been real good about it. I am fat, fat, fat. I am taking fish oil, black cumin seed oil, MCT oil, and even primrose oil, plus putting olive oil on my salad. So I'm getting all those oils. My vitamin D is in olive oil. I mean, that's only a tiny bit. But I do have salad. We have salad throughout the year, not as much in the winter, but most days we have a salad with our protein. And then we have other days we have a stir fry, or we have, sag, which is Indian pureed spinach. So we eat a lot of vegetables in general. We do lots more salad in the summer because the salad greens are just incredible. This time of year, they're harder to get. But we still get some, but they're imported from other places in the country, or they're moved from other places. I guess not technically imported. They're coming from California or somewhere else somewhere further south where they grow better. Fatty acids are not produced anything that's essential is not produced by your body. So it has to be absorbed through the diet or from supplementation. Omega-3 fatty acids are important because they help your body absorb other fat-soluble nutrients like A, E, D, and K. And omega-3 fatty acids, in particular DHA, are considered essential for brain, skin, and eye health. My eyes are pretty good. And the last year when I saw my eye doctor, she said, yeah, you have a teeny tiny bit of cataract formation, but nothing to write home about. Don't worry about it. And I take a lot of essential fatty acid. I'm also taking lutein, zeaxanthin. So my eyes hopefully will be in really good shape. Well, I'm going to have my eye exam in mid-January, in about a month from now. So other health benefits are provided by adequate levels of omega-3 fatty acids. Fatty acids can improve heart health by lowering your triglyceride levels and increasing HDL. And that's what it mostly does. If you take enough essential fatty acids, you're going to have lower triglycerides. And apparently it lowers your triglycerides more than it lowers anything, your LDL and your total cholesterol, and raising HDL, although it will help you with some of that. Also can help with reducing inflammation and improving your blood sugar levels. Important for pregnant and nursing women, so because the fatty acids are vital for brain development and neurological development of the fetuses as well as the infants. And you have to realize that when you are pregnant, all the nutrition goes to the fetus first. So you need extra so the baby gets some and you get some too. So omega-3, it's easier to be omega-3 fatty acid deficient when you are pregnant. And if you are, it can affect the neurological and cognitive development of the baby. So omega-3s may be more important for older adults because we're at higher risk of some of the health problems that essential fatty acids can prevent. We're susceptible to people in general with omega-3 fatty acid deficiencies. So if you are omega-3 fatty acid insufficient, you might have dry eyes, you might have skin irritation and dryness, joint pain, and changes in your hair texture. So you make scalp oil, and so the hair itself, the cells on the hair, keratinous tissue, like your hair, does have cell membranes on it, but it's basically dead tissue. That's why you can cut it and there's no nerve tissue, so it doesn't hurt. But you're going to have nicer hair if you have essential fatty acids on board, in part because you're going to make healthier scalp oil. Your scalp is going to be less inflamed, which means your hair follicles are going to function better, and the cells themselves of your hair, if you're watching me on YouTube or Facebook, you're seeing me playing with my hair, that the cells themselves are going to be in better shape if you're getting the essential fatty acids on board. So you're going to have changes in hair texture if you don't have enough essential fatty acids. So you'll get your essential fatty acids, as we said, through the smash fish, through fish oil, cod liver or fish oil. You can also get monounsaturated fats. You can get it through plant stuff, but remember that plants do not have DHA and EPA in them, and you have to rely on your body's delta 6 desaturase system to convert EPA to DHA. Not everybody does a good job of that. And genetically, people who have eczema and other skin conditions aren't real good at converting ethyl linolenic acid to EPA and DHA. However, if you eat flax seeds, chia seeds, flaxseed oil, soybeans, and walnuts, and other monounsaturated fatty acid foods, you're going to get monounsaturates, which are not EPA and DHA, but you'll also get some alpha linolenic acid, which to an extent your body will convert to EPA and DHA. The American Heart Association wants you to eat 2 servings of fatty fish a week, or make sure you take fish oil. Fish oil caps are not regulated, and there can be side effects like nausea and diarrhea, and I don't see that very often. I don't have people take huge amounts of it, and if somebody seems to be having that going on and they're taking fish oil, I'll just adjust back their dose. That means they're not absorbing all of it and they're taking too much. If it's coming out the other end, you're not absorbing it, so you just want to take as much as you absorb. Some doctors don't recommend omega-3 fatty acids. The research doesn't bear out that it raises levels, but I did an omega check on myself and I take all this fish oil and I have very good levels. So I don't agree with that. I know I'm as N of one, but I still think that you can increase your essential fatty acids by taking adequate fish oil. So in the United States, you want to take at least 1100 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids, and if you're female, and 1600 for men, that's between all the different things that you take. And for infants, it's only 500 milligrams. And the dose you take is going to depend on what your needs are. And so supplementation is warranted in most populations. And so when you decide to supplement, you want to decide if it's necessary for the person's health goals. Is it safe? What dose do they need? What type of supplement works best? And can the person's diet be changed? All right, so Happy New Year, everybody. If you're listening to this, it's for the first time on New Year's Eve. That's great. If you're listening to it another time, I hope your 2026 is wonderful. Happy New Year. Whatever way you celebrate the ringing in of the Gregorian New Year, have a great time. Have a lot of fun, even if it's staying home and watching the ball drop on TV, which is what I hope I'll be doing. Ron and I usually don't go out for New Year's Eve because we're usually, these late night parties, we're not excited about them. So anyway, blessings to you all, and thank you for continuing to listen to Radio Naturopath. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch-ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch-ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.